right, welcome in, everybody. Another It's Always Soccer in Philadelphia podcast. Nice. Kevin Kincaid alongside Dave Zeitlin, and we have a special guest in the studio with us, Mr. Matt DeGeorge from Delaware County Daily Times.
If there was a bomb right now in this building, then I think there'd be no union writers left except for Mark.
Yeah, we comprise 95% of the Philadelphia Union B Corps.
It's kind of an Air Force One situation here. We can't have this many in one room, so it's a little dangerous.
Right. If the three of us were to go, who would be next up on the who would be vice president then, or who would be president?
I guess it would fall to Jonathan.
John and Narducci. Yeah, it would be Tannenwald and Narducci show, plus the Saturday crew. But I'm glad to be back from honeymoon and doing another podcast with these gentlemen. It was a good time. It was a very good time. Yeah.
So you're a married man. How's it feel?
I'm a married man. It feels it doesn't feel that much different, to be honest. I have this ring on my finger now, which is weird. I keep fumbling with it. I keep grabbing at it because I'm not used to wearing jewelry. So for the first 20 minutes after the ceremony, I just kept grabbing my left hand with my right hand, kind of wondering what is this thing on my finger.
So important questions I'm about the wedding. During the ceremony, did you check your phone to find out who was winning the Union KC game?
I actually did not. Not until... Did I check it after late at night? I may have, when we were cleaning up the stuff or something like that. But you know what was ironic was I was trying to stay off the grid as much as possible. I didn't want to have anything to do with the Union. But of course, the hotel that my wedding was at was where Sporting Kansas City was staying that weekend. So I bumped into Benny Failhaber, I think, in the hotel lobby. I saw Vermees about three times. Saw him just stand in the street. I think he and an assistant coach were going to Spruce Street Harbor Park or something like that. And then the morning after the wedding, I bumped into JP Della Camera at breakfast. So he and I started talking. He sort of filled me in on the game. But no, it was wonderful, man. The wedding was great. I was sweating my ass off. It was about 92, 93 degrees. I was wearing black on black on black. But even if I was sweating through all my layers, you couldn't tell because it was black, right? So maybe was that by design? I don't know. But no, it was good. It was the party of a lifetime. We had a bunch of 90s hip-hop. The music was great. Nothing bad about it at all. Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah.
How was Peter Vermees' wedding toast? Imagine it got a little heated, a little out of hand.
Yeah,
there.
Unfortunately, the game was at the exact same time as the wedding toast. But it sounded like he had his hands full with a couple red cards and whatnot down there. I watched the highlights. I didn't really even get to watch the whole game or whatever. But it seemed like I missed some questions.
It was a good press conference.
Refereeing.
Yeah. And it was interesting because the visiting coach usually goes first, but in this case he went last, so there are only three writers left in there. It was me, Ivis, and someone else.
Oh, okay.
And then Vermees just went off on the refs immediately, and then at the end I asked a question about what he's going to do next week with the two guys after the red cards, and he said he's going to appeal, and he said the ref might have a grudge, so but he was right. I mean, they appealed, and Roland Alberg did do some pretty good acting, I guess.
What was the They got the one was appealed, the Espinoza, red for I could have seen maybe that being a second yellow, but I don't know. I thought it was just a regular foul.
Yeah, I thought Jim Curtin mentioned the same thing, that maybe it's a second yellow, but the bright side, actually, it's a good break for them because it was a red. So the ref kind of overreacting there, giving him the red, it means they're able to appeal it, and they actually got him
right,
back in
there.
Yeah,
right, because if it was just a second yellow,
and I think
then,
there was an instance. Was it maybe with Josh Yarrow?
Yes, right, because we were trying
was
to figure
that out.
Was
that down in Houston?
I think
he had that instance where he would have been better off if it was a red because it was a questionable yellow and ended up with
they
was
could
a
have
second yellow
sending off
and you couldn't appeal that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there was a bit of confusion about that, but Jim Curtin came out and told us at the press conference, didn't he pretty much confirm that we can't do anything about it because it was
he did.
Second yellow.
That's right, because we pressed him on that about whether or not that was appealable, and I guess it's only a red that's appealable.
Yeah, so then they win the two in a row because that was coming off the Columbus game, the Wednesday win, then the Kansas City win, and then they had the week off to prepare for Chicago, one of the worst teams in the league, on the road. Chicago, where they haven't won since 2013, and they haven't scored there since 2014, which I wasn't even really paying attention to until I looked at it after the game. But I mean, I don't know. On the surface, I didn't think they really played all that bad necessarily, but just had a couple bad moments, and none of the bounces seemed to go their way, and they couldn't create much.
Yeah, and if you look at the first 10 or 15 minutes, they actually had some good pressure. I thought they were actually moving the ball pretty well. They had a couple chances, too many shots from outside the box. But that entire game, and Jim Curtin mentioned it, if Sean Johnson doesn't make that crazy save on Pontius in the 31st minute, all of a sudden it's 1-1. You know, the Union have a good goal as opposed to a fluky own goal for Chicago, and all of a sudden it's different. And, you know, it's a weird tendency with those Union-Chicago games. They kind of just devolve into nothingness. Like, there's so many of those games that you just don't remember that they happened afterward.
Yeah, you're trying to think, what was the storyline with that one? Yeah, well, they had the Rollins. We were just there. We're recording on Wednesday. We were just at Jim's midweek presser, and he was saying that, you know, he always puts an emphasis on the center backs to do better in that position, but he was talking about the quick throw-in that they made. The ball comes in. Arturo Alvarez gets on it. He kind of drags a couple guys sideways. And Roland Alberg picks up a run of Matt Polster late, but he's in a position to make a play, and he just misses on the tackle, and it goes into his own. I wasn't as harsh on him as other people were, because I thought he recognized the run, and he put himself in a place to make the play. But some people seem to say that he was at most at fault for, I guess he's the one who hit the ball into his own net, so I don't know.
It was bad luck for sure, but it was a crazy week for him. Like, against KC, he had the goal and the assist in like 20 minutes. We were all talking about him being tops in the league in a goals per minutes average, and then he has that game. So it's been kind of an up and down year for him. But I mean, like, we've talked about this before, the partnership with the Roland and Tranquillo is just, it's just not, it's not working for the team.
It's weird, because he's like a guy who just doesn't, Roland just doesn't really have a position. You have to play him at the 10, because he doesn't really track back enough. But then the irony about it was that he was tracking back on that play and ends up, you know, hitting it into his own net. I didn't think, you know, the second goal, they get called on a 4v4 going the other way, because at that point it's late in the game, and Tranquillo's trying to push forward. You know, he's coming forward from the number 8 spot, so it's just Warren Craval back there. I think he was out of position on the play too. And then they just, you know, there's a nice diagonal that's played in. There's a rebound. John McCarthy makes a save initially. And then
poor John McCarthy. I mean, one start all year. He gets an own goal, almost two own goals. He has to make a diving save on another own goal shot.
His best save might have been against Keegan Rosenberry, actually, on the that deflected one that came up there. But I mean they were unlucky on that one, but maybe Ken Tribbett. I think Fabinho did a little bit of ball watching on that one with a late guy coming in on the back post. And then I can't get on Ken Tribbett for the last goal, because it's 89 minutes, they're chasing the game. He's got a guy running right at him, a couple step overs, and
it's just a chaos situation at that point. 2-0, 3-0's really not that, you know, it's really not that big of a difference, all things considered. It's a disappointing trip one way or the other from Chicago, and you're getting nothing out of it.
Bedoya is not there. Andre Blake's not there. Josh Yar is not there because of a death in the family. And, I mean, it's just sort of a throwaway. But these are the ones that matter now. So they got six. They're 8 points above the playoff line. 6 games left. They've got Montreal at home. Is it Portland, Toronto, New York, all on the road? Three in a row.
In that order.
Yeah. And then they come home for Orlando and then New York, right?
Yeah, and they have the week off before the Orlando game. So
what do you think? What's going to happen?
I mean, all of a sudden you're thinking, if they were able to get a win in Chicago, they're really kind of in cruise control. Now it's a little bit dicier. I mean, I think Curtin and company are probably taking the perspective that fourth place is the goal in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I think from the outside, and knowing Philly soccer the way it is, if you finish fifth, go to Montreal, lose a playoff game, that doesn't feel like you were in the playoffs.
Did it even happen?
Because you were barely in the playoffs. I mean, that doesn't really push the needle a whole lot.
It's like, do you remember a couple years ago when the Pittsburgh Pirates finally made the playoffs for the first time in a long time, and then they played the one
And they've done that a couple times now, and then this year everyone was on them for kind of selling some pieces at midseason, because they were like, well, you're still alive in the wild card, and they were sick of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so fourth place has got to be the goal, and that requires being ahead of Montreal. So this weekend's game is huge.
First 6-pointer. Yeah. I mean, cause they got to get 3 out of this, because I don't see them taking all that much out of the next three after that, right?
If you can somehow sneak a win in one of those, maybe, but I don't really know where.
If they could come at it, well, yeah, because say, okay, so the next four, three of them on the road, say they win against Montreal at home on Saturday, then if they can take one win out of those three road mm-hmm. games, you'd say 6 out of 12 is fine, yeah. You know, and then you come home, at least you finish the season at home because, you know, they're going to be – I don't think DC or Orlando is going to pose much of a threat, but right, you're basically, I think they're fighting between the 4 and 5 right now.
Yeah,
that's the difference between the road game and or not.
And I think it's really five teams for those four spots, and you know, towards the top of the conference. And
yeah.
The Union probably need 2 wins from here on out in order to make the playoffs. I think if they end up at 46 points, I don't see two of those bottom five teams leapfrogging them.
But
you want more than that, and I know that that's kind of Jim Curtin coach speak, but you want that home game and you want something, and
it's going to come down to I think the last game of the year at home against Red Bull, probably to determine whether they host Montreal or like go to Toronto or something, right?
That'll be a fun game.
Yeah it will Bull, and yeah. they have the Red Bull away game, you know, like 2 weeks before that. I don't probably a whole separate thing, but I still hate the playoff setup in MLS. I mean, you're letting 12 out of 20 teams in, but it's deceiving because, right, it's like you go and play that one playing game.
It's midweek, which is weird. It's only like 3 or 4 games after the season ends, and then after that, it's like 2 or 3 more days until the conference semifinals begin.
Yeah.
So it's pretty tough on those wildcard teams, which I guess it should be in some ways, but... Yeah, like if you play that one game and lose, it's
just anticlimactic because it makes the regular season not count for anything. I mean, we've been on the beat since January, right? When camp started at YSC, and then they go down to Florida, and I'm like sitting here, I feel like I'm in a completely different year, but no, we're in the same season.
Every game matters still, Kevin.
Yeah, right. Especially the ones that they play where they don't have all their starters because they're away for international duty or whatever.
I mean, it's such a long season. Kevin was single when it started.
And, I know. Look,
now
I was
now he's married.
Yeah,
so.
I have a house and I'm married. So look at all the things that we can achieve in one thing. All right. Anyway, moving on.
Are we gonna ask about your honeymoon? Were you watching?
Well, I was just about to toss
the Union game during your honeymoon.
Listen. So, okay. So this is what we did. We bugged out to the shore for a little bit because we did like 24 hours, 36 hours after the wedding. I just hit a friggin' wall, man. I was like dead. I must have been running on adrenaline the whole weekend because Sarah and I were both just like laying on the couch like blah, like done, you know. So we didn't do like a proper honeymoon. We just went down to her shore house for a little bit and just did sort of whatever, whenever. We went out to, you know, we did some cool things, but most of the time we just sort of hung around and just, like, enjoyed not having a wedding to plan for.
Did you watch a game? Did you watch the Union game
the
honeymoon?
Yeah. So,
how was that set up? Did you get, like, a big crew just, gathered around the TV?
People going nuts on the shore watching Union fight?
No,
we don't have cable at her shore house. So it's at the shore. It is, but it isn't. Her parents have a place on the Egg Harbor River in Mays Landing. So you kind of feel like you're in the Poconos, like it's cabiny, but you're also like 20 minutes from Summers Point, Ocean City and stuff like that. So they don't have cable. So when I go watch games down there, like if I bring the laptop down or whatever, I drive to the Buffalo Wild Wings at the Hamilton Mall. And I just sit there and watch it because that's the nearest.
Is that where you watch the game?
I see DeGeorge is laughing over here, but I mean, where the hell?
Like, put on the Union game. They're like, the what?
Yeah, no, it used to be like that. But now they have like 700. They have more TVs and people in there. So.
Couldn't you just see Kevin and just one other guy interested in the Union game, and everybody else has just got them huddled into a corner? It's like, all right, you guys. You get this one TV. Don't go anywhere near anyone else.
Well, it was more pathetic than all of that was that on that Saturday it was kind of crappy because we thought we were going to get the hurricane, right? The tropical storm was going to come by. It kind of ended up fizzling out, but it was still kind of crappy weather on Saturday. So I went to watch the West Virginia game at Buffalo Wild Wings at noon, and then she and I and her mom went out and did some stuff. We actually went to this vodka distillery and did like this like tour and tasting or whatever, and then. For the Union game later that night, I had nowhere else to go to watch it, so I went back to the Buffalo Wild Wings for the second time in one day. I know.
Did you keep a tab open the whole time? Or?
I should have. I don't even know if I bought anything the second time. I think I bought a couple of drinks just because I felt
just loitered.
I got to use your TVs, man. I don't have any cable around here, so it sounds kind of sad. But where else do you want me to go, man? That's the hookup.
It was better than my honeymoon, as I told Matt. I was in Greece when Jordan Harvey was traded, and it just ruined the. the whole
you couldn't like fly
the whole
back
trip.
Immediately
I just,
to right
I, was,
the,
yeah. I was just so worried about how to make it in Vancouver.
Just... Now, listen, man, if you were an Eagles beat reporter, like, and you were in Greece and the Carson Wentz trade went down, you would have been on the first flight out of Athens, wouldn't you?
You would have had to have been. So that was a good thing about when I got married 2 years ago. It was in October, and
yeah,
we figured that, you know, the union would be eliminated by then, and it, they obliged. I think the night that my wife and I got married was that the day they blew that lead to Columbus. I think that was a home game.
Oh yeah.
It was like a 3-2. I think Zach Pfeffer played in that game. Made it monumental.
Was that the after the Rice game or was it the?
Yeah, that was after.
Oh, right, because they were still right. Because we were like, okay, the Chicago thing happened, but they're still in it.
Yeah,
and then
I was
had
at
another.
That game.
Yeah, they had another letdown there. Dave, you are the keeper of the topics
our
for
topics
the
okay
so I'm gonna throw
Starts
it to
May.
You and you're
all right, let's see
something.
What we got. Well, I guess the big topic from today is a certain captain of the union. You might know him as Marisa Dew.
Yeah,
so we talked to him again. We've been talking to him pretty much every week. He played last week in Bethlehem, 30 minutes. You guys watched the game, I think. He looked pretty good. He was pretty like aggressive out there. I think I got a card in like the 30th minute.
Yeah, he played 32, and he went hard into a couple of challenges. He went to ground once. There was a couple. Yeah, he had a lot of body contact with guys where he was trying to shield the ball and trying to just hold on to possession and find an outlet pass and stuff like that. I didn't see a ton from him. He had one bad turnover at the end where he grabbed a guy coming back the other way. That's when he got the yellow card. But Jim told us straight up today. He's like, what was the quote? Like, he said, I don't care.
Yeah, he was. I think he told Mo, was like, I don't care what you're doing tactically, how sharp you look. Just go out there and get some game action and get hit and just get back into it. And I think it was really more as much an exercise for fitness because Mo is decently fit. I mean, he's been working out now for, it's been almost 2 months since he's been back to the practice field.
Yeah.
But it's more for the confidence and for the mental side. And I think Saturday was a big, or Sunday was a big step for that.
Because look, I mean, like, skill and technique are what they are. You know, Marisa Dew didn't forget how to kick a ball in 11 months. You know, I think that's why he focused on trying to get stuck in a couple of those challenges. It's like, you know, when you're coming back from, you're a quarterback coming back from an injury, you got to take that first hit, you know, that first shot in the pocket or something like that. And then you start to feel your way back into it. But I mean, the question that we've been talking about is not necessarily like, I think the way people are looking at it are saying, look, what's the point of putting him back in if you only got four games left to play? Like, if it comes down to the playoffs and that's when he's first available, you know, are you shoving him in there and kind of disrupting any rhythm that they have? Because, look, I know people don't want to hear it, but they've gotten to where they are without Mo playing a single minute.
And with some good – and it is kind of – that's the tricky part of this. So I think there's two tricky parts, really, is that one – Mo plays a position where you have to be kind of 90 minutes fit in order to play.
Yeah.
You're not a guy. It's not like with Charlie Davies, for instance, where you're going to play him for the last 15 minutes of game and hope he can affect the game. Like, Jim Curtin's a guy that he's going to start a central midfielder and then he's not going to have to worry about that central midfielder the rest of the game. You want him ready for the start for, I would think, at least 60 to 70 minutes. And have him out there and know that it's going to be fine. And the flip side is that in bringing in a Dew, you're also taking out something that's working. Warren Cravall has been really good this year. Brian Carroll's been pretty good. And you're going to replace something that has been working for something in Moa Dew that
it's an unknown.
Could work, be better, also could be worse and could have you going back to Carroll or Cravall or if he's not right, if Mo comes back and he's not the Mo Adu you expect him to be, all of a sudden you could be faced with the prospect of benching Mo Adu because he's just not there yet. And that creates an awkward situation or playing him in spite of him not maybe being fit. That's all down the road.
Yeah.
But it is a decision that looms.
It's exactly what it is. It's, you know, essentially, you know, Brian Carroll and Warren Cravall are known quantities at this point. Mo, I mean, you know what his ceiling is, but you don't know what you're going to get from him this year. So to me, I think, obviously, if you can get, I still think he tops the depth chart at two different positions. I still think he's the best center back on the team. I would take him at right center back. I would take a healthy Marisa Dew over Josh Yarrow and Ken Tribbett at this point. And I would take a healthy Marisa Dew over Brian Carroll and Warren Cravall. But at the same time, if I'm a fan, I wouldn't be super concerned if they can't get him back on the field right away because they are where they are, again, without him playing a single minute this entire year.
And it's also tough because there's the chemistry aspect. So it's not just plug and play. Him and Bedoya presuming that would be the central midfield pairing. Yeah. They need a little bit of time, but the flip side is that if that works, you've got fresh Moadu. You've got April-legged Moadu.
Yeah, it's true. Ready he's for not, the postseason. He's definitely not exhausted. If anything, he's chomping to get out there.
And
yeah.
And on top of that, if you get him at the end of the season, all of a sudden, Craval, Carroll, they're a little bit fresher because they're not going every game. You know, Jim Curtin's done a pretty good job of platooning those guys, so they're, you know, they don't have 30 games in their legs too. So you're able to throw a bunch of different options and kind of keep them guessing. And especially, you know, it's such a high energy position at that number six role. If you have a guy like Adu who's fresh, that's huge.
Yeah, exactly. What else came out of the press conference today? Was there anything interesting that we,
you know,
Carroll, Brian Carroll is fine. He was injured.
Yeah, Carroll's healthy.
Elsino had been practicing full. They both came off the bench last week, but
it's probably between Carroll and Craval for that spot.
Bedoya will be back, so he'll come back.
Yeah, Bedoya's come back tomorrow. Josh was back today. It was kind of a sad situation. His mom actually died, I guess, almost 2 months ago, but he just went back for some kind of funeral.
Yeah, Jim told us. So,
he's in good spirits. He said like he's doing well. Like he likes being part of the team. I guess his teammates have been trying to kind of help him through a tough time. So.
Yeah, it happened actually during right before the Crystal Palace game or something like that. But you know, the burial and you know, bereavement, you know, traditions or the way that they do things in Ghana, I guess are obviously different, which is why they had the you know, services 2 months later or whatever. So that sort of, none of us knew anything about that when he wasn't in the 18 during that game. But the union tweeted out and told everybody what was going on with that.
And it seems like he should play this weekend.
There would be no issues with that. The other big thing that happened today, which I don't know if you guys give a crap about it or not, is we asked Jim to comment on the Bedoya and Eric Winalda
Twitter beef. Deadspin.
Twitter beef.
Exciting day.
To Deadspin. Let me say something about Deadspin. Billy Hazley.
No, don't.
Can I talk about Billy Hazley?
Be careful.
Is that inappropriate on here? Yeah. I don't know the dude. I don't think he's got like a Twitter or anything. I never met him or whatever. But you know, the guy who writes a lot of their MLS stuff for Deadspin. Just so people know, I'm doing a service to our listeners by telling them who they're reading and what this guy's about.
This is the this is the Billy Paisley public service announcement.
Billy
Hazley.
Billy Hazley hates MLS. Like he rips it all the time. He digs on it when he can. He didn't even mention the story that Bedoya plays for the Philadelphia Union. So maybe they avoided any negative publicity or whatever. But I mean, to recap, if people haven't heard it by now, it was a Twitter argument between Alejandro Bedoya and Eric Winalda. Winalda, who doesn't rate him very highly, and Bedoya sort of coming back and taking some shots at him. And then there was a personal one about John Harkes in the World Cup.
Yeah,
and that
might have gone a little too far. But, like, we like guys who speak their mind. I mean, Jim said that, like, he knows that Alejandro is that kind of guy who talks. And, like, we in the media, like, we like Alejandro. Like, we like that kind of quote. To put it on Twitter for everyone to see, I mean, he may have taken it one step too far. But I think Ronaldo's beef with him is he just doesn't think he's good enough to start for the national team. Mm-hmm. So I understand why Bedoya is upset by that, but to kind of take it personal is something that some people probably
he's got every right to come back at him. You know, if we the media are going to be critical of guys and share our opinion of them, then it's only fair that they come back and share their opinion of us. I don't have any problem with that at all. But yeah, when you come back and make a suggestion, you know, going back to some alleged affair that happened in like 1998 before the World Cup, then it gets a little
I think Grant Wall wrote about that probably a few years ago. So if you want to look up the particulars of that involving John Harkes and Eric Winalda, you can be free to. But I didn't think Bedoya was bad for the national team these last two games. I think you have to realize and you know, not to impugn Eric Winalda's soccer sense here, but you're playing St. Vincent and the Grenadines in Trinidad and Tobago. You don't need Alejandro Bedoya really showing up in attack that much. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what Michael Bradley does in terms of his runs from deep, and he picks those out a lot. And the way Sasha Kljestan was playing the other night and the way Christian Pulisic was playing the other night, you didn't really need Alejandro Bedoya to be a guy who is jumping up into the attack a whole lot. I thought he did, you know, you give up, you outscore two opponents, 10-0 over two games.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a whole lot to argue about that. And Bedoya is being the defensively responsible guy. Yeah, I think that was fine.
Yeah, it's always a walk the line kind of situation because we're down there at practice all the time. We all know these guys outside of the game. You know, we say hey to each other or whatever. We've interviewed each of them a ton of times, you know. And if you do, you know, like if you're critical of a guy, you write something about him or you do like I do the player grades and stuff like that. You know, it's important to be able to do that stuff because fans have to need your unfiltered opinion and they need to understand how you feel about a guy. And these guys are public figures and they do get the criticism, but you also have to hand out the praise too. And you have to be fair about it. You know, if you just come out over and over and over again and say, this guy played like shit, this guy did this. And it's just over and over and over again. Then one of the things that happens is that like fans, readers, they start to, your words kind of become hollow because they're like, okay, this guy's got it out for this guy or something. So, and I think there was a little bit of that in what Eric was doing because, you know, all of his criticism seems to be reserved for Ollie, you know, when he doesn't also give the guy credit when he does something well, you know?
So have players ever gotten, I'm mad at you for like player grades or anything like that? Or?
No, but I think there was, yeah, last year me and Mo had some kind of Twitter exchange over something. I think it was Rais leaving or something.
Oh, it was Rais. Yeah, I remember that.
And basically it was just like,
you said he was like bad in a locker room or bad body language, and Maurice kind of stuck up for him, which was interesting.
Yeah, which was great. No, and he kind of, he kind of, you know, called me out on that too. And we just had a brief exchange online, but this was based on, I just said what I had heard based on a couple people telling me certain things. And Mo, as captain of the team and a guy who have obviously had a different relationship with Rais, you know, he responds back in a certain way. And it was fine. He and I talked about that the next time I saw him, which was actually when he came into CBS to do our Sunday night show. And he and I just chatted about it for a couple minutes. And all I said to him was like, look, I don't take that stuff lightly. You know, I wouldn't accuse a guy of being an asshole or being this way or that way if I didn't like truly believe it or if I didn't trust what other people were telling me. I'm not, you know, the three of us aren't out there saying like this guy sucks and that guy sucks or whatever.
We speak all, for yourself.
Yeah, I don't see much venom coming from Dave Zeitlin's.
So did you watch the game last night and what did you think of Hubba Bedoya? And are you,
I gotta be honest, I didn't watch it.
Okay. Yeah.
I watched a little bit of the replay.
Yeah, it's going to fall to me then, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I thought last night everyone's going to say it's Trinidad and Tobago, it's St. Vincent the Grenadines, it's whatever. This is not great competition. But they played really well last night, especially attack-wise. Mm-hmm. I don't think Trinidad and Tobago really threatened a whole lot. But the U.S., there's really some good chemistry coming through with Kleshchen, with Pulisic. They're mm-hmm. really playing well. I think Josie's in a really good spot right now. He's being creative. He's creating for others too, which is really important. I still think there's a little bit of misfiring in that partnership with Bobby Wood.
Yeah.
You know, Wood's been good at his moments. You know, Morris came in. Paul Areola gets a goal. You get Caleb Stanko. You get him cap tied. So, you know, I think a lot of good things there. You know, you keep a zero with Omar Gonzalez and Steve Birnbaum in the middle, which is good. You see Cameron outright.
Yeah, the defensive positions still seemed a bit weird.
I think there at least you've got it narrowed down to a select group for the next, you know, for the next kind of 2+ years. Whereas with the attack, you've got so many different options. Now that you bring in a guy like Kleshchen and he plays well,
yeah,
he's got to be another option going forward.
Well, I watched I caught like 30 minutes of the replay this morning, and it was, I picked it up right when it was 1-0. And so I saw the other three goals, and Kleshchen, Pulisic, Bobby Wood doing a lot of hard work and opening channels for Josie and giving him another body up there. I mean, they looked in the attacking third, the movement looked great, and they just had a lot of understanding up there, I think. When you have guys who are playing like that against teams that aren't that great, Ollie Bedoya doesn't need to get forward and run into the channel 500 times. And also, too, when you have those weird fullback setups or lack thereof, you have a right-sided midfielder in him who can just sort of be conservative and just sort of help protect, you know. And that's the kind of stuff he did in the Copa,
right?
You know? And I don't think he realizes that maybe he's making up for Jurgen's bizarre formations or something, and maybe that's what Wijnaldum's seeing or whatever, but Bedoya just goes out and asks and does what he's asked to do. That's the way I see it.
Right, know? And I think Wijnaldum might have tweeted at halftime that he'd like to see Nagby come on for Bedoya,
mm-hmm.
and I guess at halftime it was only still 1-0, and that's maybe a little bit of an unnecessary switch in that instance. I don't know that you needed another, that I don't think Darlington Nagby shouldn't have more opportunities with the national team,
because
he should, and he should be getting that chance, but I don't know that they needed that extra dose of creativity.
And look, Wijnaldum's a striker too, so of course that's where he thinks. You know, he just wants more goals.
I'm sure he looks at a team like Trinidad and Tobago and thinks we should have someone doing what, I can't believe we haven't brought this up yet, what Carlos Ruiz did last night. We do need to talk about that. Five goals?
That's a good way to go out, isn't it?
Can we move just him into the hex? Not Guatemala.
Yeah.
Just Carlos Ruiz.
You should be able to draft like one person.
Carlos Ruiz and his all-star bunch. Like they can move into the hex and see what they can do.
I still can't believe that the Union fans, our listeners, forced him out.
They forced him out. I mean, he was playing great here, and they just couldn't handle it.
If you're listening to this,
they demanded Novak
to
trade Carlos Ruiz immediately.
You should be ashamed.
He had to do it.
You should be ashamed of yourselves that you ran him out of town. All right, what other topics have we got on there?
Do you want to touch on there's not too much. Do you want to touch on Christian Pulisic a little bit? I mean, the Hershey kid, I mean, great game last
night. Yeah, here's what I say. He should start every game from now on. All right, next topic.
Yeah, that's really all that needs to be said.
Yeah,
play your kid's German edition.
Yeah, and if he's not going to get, I don't know what he's, you know, if he's not going to see too much time with Dortmund's first team this year, then there's no reason he can't be starting for us every time out.
I'm on board the Hershey hype train.
Yeah. Is that the official? Is
I just came up with it.
Oh, you just came up with that? That's good.
Twitter questions, we don't really have many. Yeah. I guess people are busy at like work or something, which is weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. A mediocre bad guy is a question, and he named our podcast.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, Matt, right?
So we kind of touched on this. Yeah, Matt Thornton, playoff projecting with the final six games and the likeliest places for opponents and our desires. I'm not sure if he's talking about the team or for us,
I mean,
but I wouldn't mind
saying,
going to Toronto or Montreal.
But we were okay. So we talked about the Union, like the goal having to be like number like fourth place, right? So I mean, who's number? Is NYC still number one right now? Or is Toronto?
Yeah. So NYC would be on top. Toronto's probably going to end up in one of those top two places.
Is it? It's going to be,
they've got a home heavy schedule.
New York, and Toronto, which two teams finish in the top?
Right, yeah, and NYC is going to be playing from ahead, so they, you know, I think Red Bulls right now are probably a better team, and they think they're peaking. They've had this ability in the last three or four years to really peak late, so they're going to really push for one of those top two seeds. NYC has a little bit of that cushion. So maybe they come back to the pack a little bit, but I don't know
if
that's going to happen.
I'm still not convinced at NYC. I mean, I look up there, and they're number one, but I just don't – I don't know. Something still worries me about their defense and their goalkeeping, and you know, they've been getting a lot of goals from Frank Lampard with some funky kind of – you wonder if those weird deflections and right place at right time goals are going to go away.
You've wondered that with Lampard for years. If it's somebody else, maybe you're worried about it.
Yeah.
But if it's Frank Lampard, who, you know, so many people panned, including obviously – myself panned originally.
I mean, we all did, but it was within reason. I mean, like, the dude wasn't playing, and he wasn't, you know,
he wasn't playing. There was some misdirection on the contract that he signed. There was a lot of stuff, but you know, Frank Lampard scores those goals. He just figured out how to score those goals for the last 43 years
and
that he's been playing.
Yeah, as long as you have
a
guy like him and Jim Curtin, I think probably sees David Villa as like the MVP of the league, maybe over Jovinko, or maybe I think he told us that he thought there were 1A and 1B at some point.
Certainly up there. The thing for me is that I keep looking at that team and going, well, they've got this defense. This is Josh Saunders is an okay average MLS goalie who's prone to mistakes sometimes. You keep thinking, all right, eventually this is all gonna come back on them, and eventually they're going to bite, you know, it's going to come back to bite them, and maybe it's the playoff setting that causes that. But they just keep rolling along.
They continue to defy. Was there anything else on the questions?
The only other questions we have on Twitter are about your wedding. People want to know. They don't want to know about soccer. They want to know about your gifts, if you got any letdown wedding toasters.
No, we already had a toaster.
About your ceremony.
It was perfect. And no, thank, on a serious note, thank you to everybody who, you know, for the shout outs for the wedding. It was, my wife Sarah did most of the work, probably 90% of the work, and she did a phenomenal job.
What did you do? Like, what was it, 10%? That was,
I
like,
did well.
I'll
handle
this.
The one thing I did was I did all the music. So we had like a DJ, like through a wedding, like company, like a company that specializes in like giving you DJs for specific events or whatever. But it's actually great. They give you like a whole, like, form. It's like an iTunes kind of thing on your computer, and you just go, you click on bridal party entrance, you pick your songs off of iTunes, you listen to the previews and stuff, you click on dancing this, blah blah blah. So Sarah and I actually met because she was working at WYSP back in the day before they flipped, and so she was always into like rock and roll and like alternative and stuff like that. And you know, I have a bunch of rock and roll stuff around here, obviously, so it was easy to pick the all the songs. And we had like a really cool blend of like 80s like funk kind of stuff with like 90s hip hop and some like rock songs in there too. So everybody was.
Did you pick the Dupe song or no?
No, I did not. I thought that'd be a conflict of interest.
Which
unethical.
Which Iron Maiden song is the best for first dances at weddings?
We did. Our first dance was actually like a power ballad by this 80s band that nobody's ever heard of. They're called Firehouse. And they had like three videos back in the day, but they were popular. So she has like all the power ballad like CDs and stuff downstairs. So we were looking through those. I think she came up with that, but it was different. You know, we put a lot of stuff on like the do not playlist. You know, like we didn't want to hear like the like the electric slide and the Macarena.
See, it's
and all that. I don't think anybody plays this anymore. But you know, what I mean.
It's funny because I think a lot of weddings now hand out with invitations like, what song would you want to dance to? And I guess you guys have gone in the opposite direction.
Yeah,
you know, or have either done that and then taken those and just completely ignored them and put them all on the do not playlist.
Yeah.
Or just have all your guests, which song do you absolutely not want to hear?
Yeah, yeah. Listen, we had
this wedding.
We had like Brown Eyed Girl on the do not playlist, but we had like, they have a must playlist too, and we put Old Dirty Bastard on the must playlist. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we were.
That says more than you could ever imagine about that beautiful day.
Yeah, no, it was a great time though. It was it was a really good group of people, and it's good. Now we can stop worrying about the wedding and move on with the rest of our lives, you
and
know?
Just worry about the Philadelphia Union.
Just worry about the Philadelphia Union beat. I know, yeah, and all the news stories that are coming out of Chester. So what do we got? Anything else over there? Should we wrap
it up? We should
probably
wrap this up. It's gone pretty long.
37 minutes. Well, we got another person here, man. 37 minutes.
It's definitely Matt's fault.
No, it's all good. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. And again, all of the name suggestions and all the stuff from the first two episodes. Again, we are on iTunes now. All that stuff got approved. But if we're not hitting on a format that you guys want, or if we can upload it anywhere else, just drop us a line and we'd be glad to oblige. Again, thanks to Philly Soccer Page for hosting. And you know, like I said, any feedback, comments, or whatever, anything we can do for you guys, just give us a shout. All right, that'll do it. Peace.